Welcome to the Kim Wilkes Podcast, the podcast spreading hope and awareness for victims of sexual abuse. The Kim Wilkes Co. is dedicated to promoting healing through beauty and creativity. Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Kim Wilkes Podcast. Today I actually have a guest, so this is a new format, but I thought it would be really worthwhile to have my husband come and talk today because we're going to be discussing how to have a happy marriage after abuse. So let's get into it. All right, well, let's go ahead and introduce my husband. So we have Jason here today. Jason, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi. Well, as you mentioned, I'm your husband, Jason. So I appreciate you having me on the show, and I'm glad we were able to sync up schedules so that I could participate with you. This is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into, I guess, the beginning for us. Why don't you give us your perspective of how we met?
So as I recall about how we met, it was on a Sunday, and we were both attending our church meetings. And during this particular meeting, we had an opportunity as members of the church to go up and share what we believe. And our relationship began on two T's. Yours began on truth. Mine began on toilets. I was able to factor in a way to talk about toilets as I was talking about my experiences in the Gospel of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, and you were able to talk about truth that you found, and I thought that that was a fun way to get us to interact more, and eventually led to us meeting later that evening and doing the whole formal, awkward, shaking the hands experience, and then we got to go down the deja vu path and realize through communication and your outreach that we had actually been in a class together before, and that helped to spur the conversation to where we are now.
Yeah, to where we are now, almost 3 years later. Oh, man, that's true. And, you know, the toilet comment totally worked. It caught my attention. I thought it was hilarious.
See, guys, toilet humor still works with the ladies.
Oh, man. Okay, let's see. I have kind of an outline just to keep us on track here because I know if we just talk, this will never end. So... let's start with this question. So what did each of us think about each other over the course of our sort of meeting, courtship, engagement? And I guess we should preface this by saying that between meeting and getting engaged, is that 4 weeks?
About 4 or 5 weeks, yep.
And then between engagement and getting married was another 6 weeks?
Yeah, we decided to elongate that a little bit further and make it about 6 to 7 weeks.
Yeah, because you didn't want to elope. You wanted to have a reception.
Or was that you? I can't remember now.
No, I wanted to elope. So, okay. So what did each of us think about each other over that course of time? What was that like for us?
So I think we obviously really liked each other. I think it's funny, as we've talked about this initially, that the whole love at first sight didn't exactly happen.
Right.
It wasn't like... after that first meeting and we went on our first date and hiking, we were still getting to know each other, you know, still kind of feeling the grounds there and seeing how we could develop as friends and just hang out a little bit more, and hanging out ended up progressing a lot quicker than I think we did. I don't know that either of us expected that to happen, but I think that as we just went down the path of considering each other trustworthy individuals, that's what allowed us to really open up and then focus on the inward appearance of each other. And I think that's ultimately what really spurred the movement and the pace at which we went.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say we definitely had recognition at first sight because we did realize, oh, you look familiar because we have actually seen each other before. We shared a class.
And it made it less awkward since we were both in new circumstances. Me having come from East Mesa, growing up there all my life, not knowing a whole lot of people in the West Valley, and then you just having moved up there too, that helped to spur the conversation and make social interactions a little bit less awkward if you kind of have a little bit of a backstory or this memory that you can refer back to and Mm-hmm. Helps spur conversations. It makes it, again, a lot less awkward in those circumstances.
Yeah. And I was definitely in that awkward post-mission phase, just back from a year and a half in Russia, trying to get over the culture shock. And I think, and also just out of a different relationship that I had thought would lead to things and then felt that that wasn't the right path. And so I think, honestly, with you, initially I was like, well, this, he's really nice. And it could be good practice dating for just getting used to dating, since I haven't done a lot of that. And then it just kind of progressed, like you said. And it became more than practice.
Practice became a habit.
Yeah.
And now we've got our Friday night date habits. Now we're in it.
Yes, we do. Okay. So I guess as we go a little deeper into this, why do you think we felt so confident moving our relationship forward so quickly?
Well, one reason was because we wanted to do it before I started school again.
Right. We got that sweet spot in time.
We had that sweet spot in time, so we had an opportunity to really think, how could we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
But as I kind of reflect on it, I think it really goes back to, again, listening inward to, can I really open myself up to this other person? And I think that's a somewhat of a difficult decision to make, because you oftentimes can feel a little bit vulnerable when you're doing that. And really, we just kind of took a chance. Mm-hmm. I know I was at a stage in life where I wanted to get married and I wanted to progress into a relationship. And so for me, it was like, you know what? It's worth the chance. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being a great thing to do, because that ultimately opened up a lot more deeper conversation rather than just the superficial stuff
mm-hmm.
that often occurs within relationships. And it doesn't get down to the meaning of who a person is, their beliefs, things like that. And I think that as you get down to those core details, it opens up the possibility for relationships to progress and move forward if you both feel the same way about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes when people talk about relationships and talking about finding the right person, they boil it down to just finding someone with similar interests. And so it might just be that as you're having those conversations that they stay pretty superficial, because you're just talking about your common interests. But I personally don't think that a strong foundation can be built on common hobbies. And I think for us, what we had in common wasn't necessarily all of the same things, but just similar, experiences in life that helped us to understand each other on a much deeper level.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point about the experiences and focusing on them versus focusing on activities exclusively, because we do have activities that we share in common. We love going hiking. We love going to art festivals and really being culturally savvy. We love going out and
eating good food.
Yeah. And so I think, though, the point to those things is that in order for it to be less superficial, through those experiences, we're able to know each other better. And that helped to propel us in our relationship and learn how to love each other and support one another, to where the focus wasn't on the interests, but on each other. Mm-hmm. And with that type of a mindset, it doesn't matter what you're really doing, you're going to be there to support each other, and you're going to have a good time either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess that kind of brings us to a good segue. One of the topics that I had someone request us talk about is trust after trauma. So keeping in mind that, you know, this podcast was really meant for victims and survivors of sexual abuse. And so I know for myself, being through that, I really didn't know that I could open myself up to trust a man or anybody in this sort of relationship that would be, you know, romantic and intimate and personal and like forever. Like that's a lot. And as someone who really, really has to work hard to trust anybody, it was definitely scary for me going into this and kind of feeling things progress and thinking, oh, this could be serious. This could be for real. So how do you think we cultivated trust? You go ahead and you give your answer and then I can talk about it too.
So on one particular night where we had a date, I think that really defined our relationship, I was going through in my head, if I'm really going to take this risk and really progress the way I want to in a relationship and get married, I'm going to have to be open and honest. And I think that that's somewhat of a controversial area for people. I think that there's oftentimes a saying of don't reveal too much early on. Mm-hmm. And we definitely revealed pretty early on. But again, in taking a risk, for me, if this is truly an area where I want to progress in, because just in the few interactions that I had with you, I felt like you were a person that I could trust myself, mm-hmm. especially with my experiences, and open up to you, because after a few dates, going into that third date, it was then at that time that I knew that I wanted to progress more with you in our relationship. Mm-hmm. It was that opening up of who we were. And I think that our beliefs initially are kind of what set us up to that point. Mm-hmm. But I think oftentimes the best way to learn how to cultivate that trust is to take that risk of let me be open and honest and see what that other person's reaction is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm trying to think back now, because this was a while ago. But as I'm thinking back to leading up to that night, and given the few dates that we'd had and the interactions that we'd had, what I knew was essentially that you were super cute and funny and really nice, and I enjoyed spending time with you. I also knew that a lot of the other girls at church really liked you. So I did do a little due diligence. I think I told you this at some point later on, that I asked a couple of the other girls, you know, if they'd been on dates with you and what they thought of you, and if they thought you were just, you know, playing the field or could be serious. And so I did ask around, because it was a big step for me to say, okay, how much do I want to tell this guy? Because this was a point where I really hadn't told very many people about the abuse. So it was kind of a big deal for me to share that. But I think I also knew that if I wanted to have like a real relationship, that I had to put that on the table, because it came with a lot of baggage. And I was at a point in my life where I was trying to figure a lot of things out still. So I was in one of my darker times where I was having panic attacks really regularly while trying to date you. And so that, I guess, in and of itself was kind of just a minefield. But I was able to, like you said, just take that risk and say, you know, let's just see how this goes. Worst comes to worst, I'll just never talk to him again. But I guess, as I think about that and taking that risk, and that night when I did share with you, you know, that my family has some issues and I was sexually abused and it's led to a lot of things for me, you were able to also share your experiences that helped me to realize that you understood things that nobody else understood, which is why it was really difficult for me to have relationships with other people, because they just didn't get it. So do you want to talk a little about that? And I think what made us click so much.
Yeah. So in terms of my backstory, during my high school years, I had actually developed a very debilitating and severe chronic pain condition, where the ailment pertained to pain, having constant, incessant pain that disrupted your lifestyle. So while I don't always understand everything that you or anyone else goes through that endure these treacherous life experiences. I do have an idea what it feels like to be either misunderstood or to feel like you don't have any value, that you can't function, and that there is hope and that that can be overcome.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. I'm trying not to get too emotional so we can be understood. But I guess the next thing to talk about would be actually getting married. Because I think after that point, we had that foundation of trust and mutual understanding for each other. And we just kind of knew that if we wanted to do it, this was the right thing. A lot of things had lined up to make it possible for us to even meet and be together. So we decided to get married. And to get married fairly quickly because we wanted to. Right? There was just no reason to wait once we knew, I think.
No, there really wasn't.
So, yeah, I guess that would have been a conversation in June.
Yep.
And we were married in August. So, we got married. And then that's when I think we had to kind of figure out how to actually navigate each other's issues. Because they didn't just go away after we talked about them, right? So I was still dealing with my panic attacks. I was still in a depression. I guess I'm trying to quantify that compared to where I've been throughout my life. It maybe wasn't the deepest point, but I wasn't doing well. I really wasn't all that healthy. And I'm realizing I made a big life decision, but it all worked out. So I guess, what was it like for you when you finally kind of saw what it was like to live with me?
So it was definitely a learning experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talked about your concerns in getting married, and I had my own too, most notably being that I could relapse mm-hmm. into my condition, that the pain could come back, and that I wouldn't be able to be a good provider or a good husband. And those are concerns that I had to suck it up. Mm-hmm. And going back to our conversation about trust, understand that you would still be there for me, just like you were trusting me to be there for you. Mm-hmm. And so while it wasn't easy initially, and while communication also wasn't easy initially, so backing up for a moment, watching her go through it, and then noting that when a panic attack occurs, that it also disrupts your ability to communicate effectively and communicate the way you want to. I was in a state where I just had to watch it happen mm-hmm. and watch you go through that, knowing that there wasn't a lot I could do other than continue to make my physical presence known to help you get through it. Mm-hmm. This was something that you had to tackle and let time play itself out. And so it did lead to frustration initially. Mm-hmm. Frustration on my end, feeling that I wasn't doing enough, both in terms of what to do when it occurs, but then how to prevent it, or understanding your triggers as well. Because oftentimes we did initially see or notice that there were some things that could trigger you. And then there became that apprehension on my side about what do I do, what do I not do. But what I'm glad about is that we were still able to find moments when we could communicate and talk about things that just weren't possible to talk about before marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, these are matters that just don't have a good way of coming up.
Right.
Are hard to bring up. And quite frankly, are unexplainable. It takes the experience to go through it mm-hmm. and then to have the right mindset during it to be able to understand how do we best address this as a couple, because we're united as one now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just Kim. It's not just Jason.
Yeah.
It's Kim and Jason. And now this becomes something that we need to work through together.
Yeah. So I think that as you're expressing, kind of what I was going through made it impossible for me to really communicate in the moment and during the panic attack, which is something I touched on in our last episode, excuse me, talking about what the brain does during abuse and how that can turn into PTSD and can stay with you. So just knowing that now, it wasn't something that I could explain so eloquently then at that point, because I really hadn't done a lot of research. I had just been living with my own problems and trying to figure that out. And I remember, I remember you coming to me and wanting to find solutions and wanting to find ways, like you're saying, to prevent and be preemptive about things and about triggers and starting to track those sort of things. And that to me just seems so exhausting and overwhelming and like so much on top of what I was already going through. But I knew that you had kind of trained yourself to think that way based on your own therapies and getting through your own things. And so I had to take that and say, you know, you're doing better, I'm assuming, because we were where we were at. And so I had to kind of say, okay, what can I do? Because, you know, I want our marriage to work. So I guess we can move into our next question, which is, how has my experience with abuse affected our marriage? And I guess initially, even before we got married, because my trauma was sexual trauma, obviously that was a big scary thing for me. Thinking about, you know, being intimate, being sexual, like those are things that had such negative connotations for me that it was really scary to think about going into that. But I guess what I found with you is that we had that natural, that trust that we built in that chemistry, that it really became a non-issue, which is not what I expected. I think I built it up to be a lot bigger of a deal than it was for me, because we built that trust before getting married and becoming intimate.
And to add on to that, I think to answer your question directly, mm-hmm. it led to greater love between us.
Mm-hmm.
So you've gone through a very unfortunate traumatic event, but rather than it being a difficult challenge, because of that trust and because of how we felt about each other by being open and explaining the best that we could at the time prior to being married, that it just led to opportunities to show love in different ways.
So moving along to our next question, did finding out about the abuse make you see me differently?
It did not. During the earlier portions of our relationship, I was actually given the opportunity to view the official police documentation reports if I wanted to, and I declined that option. And the reason for it is I wanted to hear your experience from you first and solely before turning to documentation to learn about that incident. I wanted to respect the sensitivity of the situation and put my trust in you. And honestly, I was much more focused on you at that time, you right now, versus what had happened in the past, which again was very unfortunate. I also wanted to avoid any type of negative perceptions about what had occurred, and it just wasn't something that I felt that I needed to review in order to make my decision about whether or not I wanted to progress with you. I had already made that decision, and nothing was going to change that.
Well, it's definitely good to hear. I guess my question then would be, just because I think not just me, but a lot of people who are victims of sexual abuse, we feel like if we talk about it, if we share it, then people will only see us as a victim and only see us for what happened instead of who we are. But I guess you'd say that you didn't think that way?
That's correct.
Okay.
And again, maybe this is another result of having not reviewed the documentation, mm-hmm. is that I had those blinders on out of respect for the situation. And again, I don't want to have my thoughts misconstrued about what happened or to see you differently or to see you as how you've been outlined in report versus how you want to be seen. Because it's more important to me about your opinion on the matter and how you feel about it and how you want to be viewed than information that I have to gather by reading these types of reports and things.
Mm-hmm. So I think something I've learned being married to you and then just opening up more to everyone is that the fear that we have about being seen for our trauma, it's more of just a fear than a reality. People don't chalk you up to your experiences. They do see you as a person, even if you share something sensitive like this. Not in every case, but I think by and large that most people are very understanding and compassionate. And so just if you are out there listening, feeling very stuck and like you're not going to be able to open up or have a relationship, just know that people's perception of you won't change just because of something that happened. So we had another question that we have touched on already a little bit, but we can go ahead and elaborate just to make sure that we fully address it. So I was asked, how do we handle triggers, together or separately, and is one way better than the other? So I think initially it was just a matter of understanding, okay, there are triggers, there are panic attacks. And I think we went through a period where you would try to be there. It would sometimes be really hard. And so you would let me work through it on my own. And because we were still figuring out our communication, sometimes that left me feeling worse. Sometimes that left you feeling worse. But as you've mentioned, as we were able to communicate better what was going on in those moments, and obviously we had to get to a happy moment to be able to talk about it. But once we did that, then the next time it was easier to understand the actions for both of us and what we were choosing to do. And we kind of made a game plan so that it wasn't about making a decision in the moment, trying to figure out the right thing to do anymore. It was, okay, we've talked about this. So what would you say we do now? I know they're farther and fewer between, which is great, but what's kind of our mode of operation now, do you think, when I get triggered?
So I think still an important part is what you need to do to work through it. And rather than me trying to be the Mr. Fix-It, analyze and address it, it's me taking a step back and acknowledging it. It's there. It's happening. And there are still moments where I give you an opportunity to be on your own. But in our communication, we've been able to establish that in allowing that to occur, it's not a form of abandonment, because I know that's a key thing and can exacerbate the situation. But I'm still by no means perfect. And sometimes that initial part of a panic attack is difficult for me. Mm-hmm. And so it really becomes a situation where we make sure that you're in a comfortable state to work through that initial stage, and then I can come back in once that initial phase has gone through and I can be there to support you, because I know that for you, you do appreciate that. physical presence component. And it's a little bit easier for me to support you in kind of that latter stage of the panic attack, because crying for me is a trigger for my own self. And, you know, it causes me to shut down. And it's terrible to think of that happening, that in your moment of being, you know, in kind of this excruciating position that I turn off. And so it's something that I'm still to this day trying to work through, where I could potentially be there throughout the full stages. But in my experiences, I turned off.
Yeah.
It helped me to get through the excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And just kind of suck it up.
Because just to explain for everyone, when I have a panic attack, generally there'll be the trigger and then it turns into the initial stages of paralysis. And so it is a lot of crying, shaking, sobbing to a point where I am in a ball. I cannot move except for my muscles shaking. I can't really speak. It's just sobs, and it's not cool or pretty. And I understand that it would be really hard for someone to be there for it. Even though that's the time, right, where you want that comfort, I think we've established that it's better for us to let that pass so that it's not so hard on you. And I think, like, as much, maybe if you're out there and having the same situation, as much as it's nice to think that you could have someone who's there for you always, sometimes being there for you isn't, you know, sitting there with you through all of it. Because that's a big ask. And you have to have that give and take in a healthy relationship, I think.
Yeah, it's difficult to accept that. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm trying to work through myself to hopefully be in that position where I can be more of a participant. But it requires a lot of training on my end. Yeah. Again, just based on what I've gone through. To let it happen rather than to try to escape mm-hmm. that type of an atmosphere to get away from it, because it just triggers on my end.
And I guess that's maybe the interesting thing about our relationship, is that it's not a one-sided trauma. Like, we've both had serious trauma that has left our bodies with different triggers, and we have to respect that for each other. You know, it's not just one of us needing something from the other. We're continually having to figure out how we can help each other, because we both have issues. And I think everybody does have issues. So in your marriage, if you're thinking it's one-sided, you're probably wrong. I'm thinking we should probably kind of wrap this up for at least this episode, just so we're not taking up too much of everyone's day. If you have more questions, you who are listening, then feel free to shoot them my way, whether that's on social media or through Anchor on the website, wherever you are, you can ask your questions, and I bet that I could convince Jason to come back for another episode if there are questions.
We just have to check with my agent.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. So we'll get down to this kind of final wrap-up question. So we've basically established that, yes, the sexual abuse and sexual trauma has had an effect on our marriage, which I think, you know, is to be expected. So how would you say that we have worked through those challenges? How have we stayed married here for almost 3 years? And I think we're going pretty strong, so it's going to be quite a lot longer. It doesn't sound like a lot right now, but for these, how have we worked through our challenges?
So I think that the number one key way in which we are able to work through these challenges is sex. Now, I want to make sure I clarify that and elaborate. just because we want to make sure people have the right perspective here, everyone. Sex is actually an acronym. It's S-E-C-K-S. The first S in sex is selflessness, followed by encouragement, compassion, kindness, and support. And I think those are five key attributes that we've had to learn, to grow in, to mature in order to best help support one another, you know, in those moments where we are trying to learn how to be there all the time, which is what we want to be, but that we're still having to respect our individual circumstances. And so sex has played a big role, I think, in what we've been able to accomplish and achieve and where we will be able to progress to as well.
Absolutely. So I think that'll be a wonderful thing to elaborate on in the future, but probably a good place to stop for today. So thank you, babe, for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to share this with everybody, and hopefully it will help somebody out there. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Kim Wilkes podcast. If you'd like to ensure plenty of future episodes, consider making monthly donations and becoming a listener supporter by clicking the listener support button on my Anchor podcast page. Thank you so much.